originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at www.horseracingradio.net. As you all know, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So we have a bit of a different story for you this evening. Our guest started out riding quarter horses at the fair circuits in her home state of Idaho and eventually turned to thoroughbreds. She became a licensed apprentice jockey at the age of 28 while raising 3 children. She's now based in Louisiana, where she's finding success at the very competitive Fairgrounds Winter Meet. With 166 wins and over $2 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey Aubrey Green. Aubrey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure having you here, Aubrey. And I know you have a busy day off. You have your kids there, so I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy day. Tell us about your children.
Well, they're 8, 9, and 10 years old. I have 2 boys and a girl, Eli, Austin, and Allie. And they're here visiting for the spring break, and then they also live with me in the summers as well. So they just got here last night. They're pretty excited. They like Louisiana when it's not, 105 degrees. So this should be a good little visit.
Do they show interest in horses as well?
Initially, they all did like to get on the horses just a little bit, but my boys have pretty well lost interest. My daughter, Allie, she's 8 years old. She still likes the horses. She comes to the races with me, and she gets on the equisizer and plays on it, and she loves to get on the pony whenever I have an opportunity. So,
I love it. Obvious question I have to ask, what if Allie decides she wants to be a jockey? What would you say?
I'm pretty fortunate. I don't think she's going to be small enough to be a jockey. But if it was something that she wanted to do and she was the right size, I would definitely be supportive of it.
Speaking of size, Aubrey, how tall are you?
5 foot.
5 foot. So I'm assuming weight's not too hard for you.
No, I don't struggle. I usually sit around 106 to 108 pounds. So I do pretty well.
Now tell us about growing up in Idaho. What was that like?
Just quiet country life. We lived out in kind of the middle of nowhere and went to a school with, I think I graduated with 45 or 48 kids. Pretty small town. Basically, we grew up with my dad hunting and working, and we gleaned the fields for potatoes when, at the end of harvest, and I went horseback riding every single day, just out bareback or with a saddle or wherever I wanted to go.
Was your dad a farmer?
My dad is a butcher, but we were out in the middle of all the potato fields, and my parents actually during the spud harvest would work in the spud fields. So we weren't farmers per se, but we did live out amongst the farms.
Picking potatoes, that sounds like hard work for a young kid, definitely, and sounds like you grew up outside and with that kind of a lifestyle. Now, how did you first get introduced to horses?
My parents bought a horse for the family when I was 9 years old, and he was a Christmas present. We really didn't know anything about horses at all, and I just started getting on him. Every single day, I mean, I'd run out and jump on him bareback. I'd have a halter and a lead rope. Luckily, he was a very well-broke, good kid's horse. And I'd go ride him all over the countryside. My parents usually didn't even know where I was on him. They knew which direction I went. So I grew up just getting on and riding through the fields, galloping through the fields. There was one time I actually took one of my horses, through the Snake River, which was a horrible, dangerous idea, managed to survive that ordeal. But it was just something that I loved to do. I loved to be on the horses. As soon as I got home from school, I was out there on the horse. In the summers, as soon as the sun came up, I was out there on the horse.
So it sounds like you were mostly self-taught then in the beginning of when you first got your horse at 9. You said you didn't really know much about horses, but I guess you learned as you went along.
Definitely. I remember my parents still don't know a whole lot about horses because they really didn't spend a whole lot of time with them. It eventually became my job to take care of the horses, and I mean, I was the one who was completely involved with them. They spent a little bit of time, but not much. And so I was very self-taught. I remember when I was like 10 or 11, I asked my mom to saddle the horse, and she said, if you can't saddle him yourself, then you can't get on him. So I had to go ride him bareback.
Solve that problem, right?
Yeah.
Now, how about school? Were you a good student?
I was a good student for the most part. I did have, you know, pretty good grades. I was an honors English student. I wasn't super interested in my education early on. I just got through school, basically. And then I did attend college. And I got a bachelor's degree in English literature. That's just a whole nother phase of my life where I was doing some different things. I had horses. I rode them as often as I could, but it was during the time that I was starting my family. So I wasn't as involved as I was initially.
As I mentioned in the intro, definitely a different story you have for us, Aubrey. You know, most guests we have here on the show grew up around the racetrack and started out at a young age. You took a little different route. Jockey Aubrey Green joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So obviously, at 18, you had no ideas of going to the racetrack. You went to school. You started a family. So when did the idea of becoming a jockey first enter your mind?
Well, here's the thing. I wanted to be a jockey when I was a kid. And I remember when I was about 16 years old, I was getting into a little bit of trouble, you know, hanging out with kids I shouldn't have been hanging out with and not doing my homework and getting some bad grades. And I remember my principal, who was somebody that I looked up to very much. He was also my English teacher. He pulled me into his office and he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be a jockey. You know, and he crushed me. He said, that's a dream. That's a dream. You need to pull your head out and you need to start focusing on school and you need to get an idea of what you want to do for real. And where I grew up, there wasn't, I wasn't really exposed to the racing. In fact, I didn't even know that we had a couple of little racetracks, you know, 10, 15 minutes from my house. So the idea of becoming a jockey sort of settled. I didn't think about it too much. And I just went on with life. I went to school, started my family, and it didn't start to set to become a reality for me until I got a horse. His name was Vodka Lunch. I bought this horse for my ex-husband because he was a big, tall horse. I thought, that's perfect. I can get him involved in the horses with me if he has his own horse that's big and, you know, he'll get along with him and it'll be great. So I bought this horse and they didn't get along at all. So I ended up riding him and I was doing this eventing club called Posse. And in that eventing club, we did flat track saddle, stock saddle racing. And so when one of the trainers saw my horse run in this little stock saddle race, he said, hey, we need to take that horse to the fair and run him in a real race. And I was like, I didn't even know we had real racing, you know? And that's how I got started. I started galloping my own race horse and eventually just kind of worked into those barns, which were mostly quarter horse barns. And that's why I started on quarter horses.
Well, first of all, I just have to say, I hope your principal has seen all of the success you've had as a jockey, crushing your dreams, as you said initially. But you didn't let that stop you. Question for you, though. Stock saddle racing. I've never seen that in person. Describe that to us a little bit.
It's really fun. It's not official at all. You're just using your Western saddle, your Western cap. All the other events in the club are Western, so there's like barrel racing and poles and things like that. So the way we do it is we just line up, you know, 4, 5, 6 horses, and they shoot off the little gun to start the race. So we have to do our best to line up together and not be in front of anybody or behind anybody and start when that gun goes off. The longest race was only 3/8 of a mile. So it's a pretty, you know, it's not like really long thoroughbred racing, but it is around the turn because it was on a 1/2 mile bull ring track. And it was just really a fun thing. I loved my posse days. I miss those days a lot of the time because it was such a laid back, fun event to go to.
Sounds like a good way to get started, Aubrey. And as you mentioned, eventually you went to the racetrack, and that had to be a little bit of a culture shock, I'm sure, going from stock saddle racing to riding in a exercise saddle going around the racetrack. Did that come naturally for you?
It really did. Obviously you have to build those muscles. The first time that I galloped in an exercise saddle, I jacked the irons up fairly high, not racing length or anything, but pretty short. And I went and galloped my horse around and I was like, oh, great, I'm good, you know. And then I come back and I jumped off the horse and I fell straight to the ground. My legs were jello. So developing the muscles took time. It's, you know, a couple weeks of getting used to it and building those muscles. But as far as getting a good seat on the saddle, it did come pretty naturally to me.
How did you build those muscles?
Just by getting on the horses.
Galloping lots of horses, right? That's what they say, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a different riding thoroughbreds, riding races especially. They say it's such a different, you use every muscle in your body. So in order to work those muscles, really, you just have to do it. So
you do. You truly do. You know, I had, this might be taking us a little off track and maybe we'll get there a bit later, but I did have an injury last year. And when I was coming back from that injury, you know, I can't get on horses. I couldn't get on horses until I had the doctor sign me off. And I tried to stay fit the best that I could while I was down and not able to get on horses. When I came back to get on horses, the difference in my muscles was incredible. I had no strength for what I needed to do on those horses because I hadn't been on them for 2 months. So it really is something that no matter what you're doing on the side to stay fit, nothing will do it. Nothing will get your muscles built and ready like being on horses.
You mentioned 2 months, Aubrey. It brings back memories. I remember various injuries I had. And being me, I would always rush back and ride as soon as I could. And so, you know, the longest time period I think I was out was, you know, a couple months. And it's amazing how quickly you can use lose that fitness, yet how long it takes to get it back doesn't really make sense, I guess.
Days.
But
days. When I was in the hospital, I lost almost 10 pounds in the 7 days that I was in the hospital. And when I looked in the mirror, I remember thinking, I don't even recognize my own body because my muscle definition, my tone and strength, it was gone. And you lose it so quickly if you're not on those horses.
Jockey Aubrey Green joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Aubrey, I read that you rode in a schooling race. I know I'm going to screw this up. At Pocatello Downs?
Pocatello.
I knew I was going to screw it up. What was that like? A schooling race. What does that mean?
A schooling race is a race where they bring together several horses that are getting ready to run that haven't run in a race yet. So they're first-time starters. You're trying to school them and teach them to leave the gate. And oftentimes they are run with jockeys or with exercise riders on them. So at the time, I was not a jockey yet. I was pursuing my license, and that was actually the final step to get my license. So that schooling race, it was a quarter horse race. I can't remember if it was 200 or 250 yards. And I was really nervous for it. I actually had only left the gates a couple of times before I went ahead and did that. So I was, like, really jumping to get to the race because I wanted to become a jockey so badly. But it was a really fun race. I don't even remember where I placed in the schooling race. I don't remember if I won it or if I ran second or third. I just remembered the nerves at the time were so intense. But I was so exhilarated at the end of the race. It was so much fun.
You mentioned nerves, and obviously you would feel that way early on in your career or later on in your career when you're riding in a big stakes race or some other similar type situation. How do you deal with nerves?
The nerves have settled for the most part. I very rarely have any kind of nervousness going into a race anymore. It's just become an everyday thing for me. It's actually almost a relieving, relaxing feeling to go into the gates for me now. But when I first started, I would just pretend that they weren't there. I would just put on a show like, oh, I've got this, you know, I'm good. And people didn't know how nervous I was.
Well, you obviously didn't let it stop you. And riding quarter horses in the very beginning, I have to tell you, Aubrey, and I've told this story on the show in the past, but when I was starting out galloping horses and starting to work horses from the gate, I obviously had the dream of becoming a jockey as well. And breaking a horse sharply from the gate was always something I struggled with in the beginning. So a friend of mine said, well, I know how to fix that. We're going to take you to the farm and I have a quarter horse you can break from the gate. And that's going to fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, he was right, because those horses leave the gate so fast. I remember I lost my irons the first time I ever did that. They just break so quickly. It's such a rush. What was that experience like for you starting out on quarter horses?
So it was the experience. The first time I ever broke out of the gate, I was on a 2-year-old quarter horse who had never run and who had also never broke out of the gates. And so he had been in the gates and he'd galloped out of the gate. He'd walked out of the gate. He'd stood and backed out. You know, he was okay that way. And I had been on him doing all of that schooling. And I remember the trainer saying, well, you know, if you want to get ready for the races, we've got to get you to break out of the gates. So he put me on this little quarter horse, and we did a two-horse race with these two quarter horses that were first-time starters. And he told me, grab a mane hold, and I kind of was like, what do you mean? I didn't know what he meant because I didn't grow up around the track. So these kinds of things I didn't know. So he said, just grab a mane hold up top and down low with it, whatever hand on top is comfortable. And he said, when he goes, just go with him. And so they popped those gates open, and the horse hesitated just very slightly. You know, it's fractions of a second with quarter horses. And I didn't even realize he hesitated. It all happened so fast to me. But he hesitated just a fraction of a second. The other horse outbroke us. Next jump, I was already on top of him. And we worked, 150 yards, and I pulled the horse up, and I never had to worry about it again. It just happened. I just went out the gates with him. And I really am grateful I started out on quarter horses first, because I learned that the best way to get a horse out of the gate is to stay out of their way. And one of the things that I've been, that I'm known for, at least in these circuits that I ride down here, the trainers know you want a good gate rider, you put on Aubrey Green, because those horses are going to come out of the gate. And I don't do anything special. I just try to stay out of the horse's way.
Well, Aubrey, continues to work out well for you. And rode that race at Pocatello, and then you went on to Wyoming Downs, and you rode your first winner in August of 2015. Do you remember that day?
I do. I remember it was a quarter horse. And, of course, my mind's drawing a blank right now on what her name is. I remember exactly what she looked like. She was the meanest little quarter horse in the world. But she was actually one that went in a flipping halter, or, some people call it a flipping halter, some people call it a rig, which prevents the horse from flipping over in the gate. It was only my fourth race at all that I was, I rode three races in Pocatello and then went to Wyoming and rode that race. And I was so nervous about that flipping halter because I'd never used one. And I thought, well, if she does try to flip, she's going to be hung up in the gate. And, that's not how it works. But anyway, the race went perfectly. She actually was really good in the gate. She didn't do anything wrong. She broke beautifully, and I just held on to her. I think I whipped her three times and won the race. So I was definitely on a horse that deserved a win. I didn't do much to help her get there, but I felt great winning that race.
I read a funny story. Someone wrote an article about you, Aubrey, that first winter. It was so exciting and new to you, you didn't even know where the winner's circle was.
No idea. Didn't even know about going into the winner's circle.
Well, you quickly figured it out because you went there many times after that. And when did you start riding thoroughbreds?
So that was on a Saturday that I rode the winner on the quarter horse. And the next day I rode my first thoroughbred for a trainer named Cash Evans. And her name was Sandhill Jill, was the first thoroughbred that I rode. And I ran third on her. I remember looking at the pictures, and I looked like a gallop girl on the horse for the first three quarters of the race. But I did try to get down and ride the horse, and I did, I rode her to the line, and so I felt really good about that. And I was feeling good about learning, being in control of the horse and using my whip. And so that was my very first thoroughbred ride.
So obviously you decided to stick with thoroughbreds. Aubrey, and why was that?
Yes. I always wanted to be a thoroughbred jockey. The quarter horses were fun, but I found having to try to think about the race a little bit and have a plan about what you're going to do and really having to be a team with the horse, being a partnership in that team, I found that so much more rewarding. Quarter horses, you're a team, but it's not the same. There's no relaxing the horse. There's no asking him to wait. There's no taking him behind other horses or planning on being on the lead. And that, I'm not sure why, but that is so much more fun and so much more rewarding for me and feels so much more accomplishing.
Was that an easy transition for you to go from quarter horses to thoroughbreds?
Very, very easy. Of course, when I started, I was riding both. And so I was going back and forth in the same day. I would ride quarter horses and then I'd ride thoroughbreds. And that was, it was fine at the time. As my career went on, I rode more and more thoroughbreds. And at this point, I pretty well only ride thoroughbreds. So I did go back this last summer to Wyoming Downs. I flew in and I rode a couple horses. I won one on a thoroughbred and ran second on a thoroughbred for Cash Evans. And I also rode one of the quarter horses for Travis Lusk, who is the trainer that got me my license. And I felt so bad after the race because I hadn't been on a quarter horse in almost 2 years. And I broke out of the gates great, but everything after that was not fabulous. I wasn't moving quite with the horse, and it was just not comfortable because I hadn't done it in so long. So the transition from quarter horses to thoroughbred was very easy for me, but for me to go back to quarter horses at this point, I would have to get on a couple before I could do it.
That's interesting that one transition's easier than the other. But at the same time, it kind of makes sense. Like you mentioned, thoroughbreds, it all happens quite a bit slower, and you have more time, mm-hmm. obviously, to think, although not a lot, but you have a little bit more time. Very interesting. How many races did you win on quarter horses?
Oh, I think it was only like five.
But hey, it was your start.
It was a good start, and I do love them. I broke a couple quarter horses after I rode that race. I actually broke some quarter horses up at Louisiana Downs for some trainers, and I did fine. I really needed to get that click back, and if you're not on them regularly, it's a different race. It's a totally different race.
Well, Aubrey, we are going to take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. We're here with Aubrey Green. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accept the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcott. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined this evening by jockey Aubrey Green. Aubrey, we are delving into your very interesting story and where we left off. You were riding at Wyoming Downs. You just had your start riding thoroughbreds. We talked about the differences between thoroughbreds and quarter horses. So eventually you made your way to Delta Downs. From there you went to Turf Paradise, which from what I understand was kind of a big turning point in your career. You learned quite a bit riding there at Turf Paradise, and why was that?
Well, before I tell you that, there was a couple of things that happened. when I left Wyoming Downs, I actually went to California and rode at the Santa Rosa Fair Meet. And I also went to Ferndale. Then I went to Delta Downs. When I went to Delta Downs, I had a little bit of a setback. Just wasn't feeling like I was ready to do what I was trying to do. So I actually did take a step away from racing for about 7 or 8 months. And it was at that point I went back then to Wyoming Downs in the summer of 2016, rode races, won a couple more thoroughbred races, started my bug, and then I went to Turf Paradise. And when I got to Turf Paradise, you know, I was feeling pretty good about myself. I think I'd won 7 or 8 thoroughbred races, and I had learned a lot, or, you know, I felt like I had learned a lot and was doing well when I got there. However, I had a rude awakening. There's a lot more horses in a race at Turf Paradise than at, you know, some of these fair meets that I've been riding at, and the Wyoming Downs track often didn't have as many horses in a race. And the jockeys were a lot tougher and a lot more experienced, and they rode a lot tighter. So it was a rude awakening for me, and I realized that I needed to learn a lot more. And I went through some struggles while I was there. Fortunately, I had a very, very good friend who became my mentor. His name's Isaias Enriquez, and he took me under his wing while we were at Turf Paradise because he said that he knew I was tough. He said he knew that I wanted it and that I would put forth the effort. So he took me under his wing. We built an equisizer together so he could teach me how to get really in rhythm while I was pushing and whipping. And so throughout this process, there was a whole lot going on as far as learning how to ride, building up my own confidence, learning how to fight back in a race, you know, and hold my ground in a race. And it really just put me in a good spot psychologically, mentally, emotionally, and I felt like a strong person by going through that. So that's where I learned a lot, and that's really where my apprenticeship started taking off, and I started winning races at the end of that meet.
Built your own equisizer. Obviously, for those who don't know, an equisizer is a wooden horse, a mechanical horse that mimics the rhythm and the actions of a racehorse. And by doing so, like you mentioned, Aubrey, you build up muscle. Is that something you've struggled with? We talked about that a little bit during the first half of the show, but as a woman, do you feel like you have to try harder to be stronger than the guys?
I do. I definitely feel like I have to try harder. Sorry, I've got a dog running out of the house. Hold on. As a woman, I do feel like I have to try a lot harder to be strong. And, you know, if the guys are doing anything in a race, if they ever make a mistake, it kind of gets brushed off. But when women make mistakes in a race, it's, you know, well, she's not strong enough, or it's because she's a girl. And so we really have to be a little bit better in order to be considered equal on the racetrack.
Have you found throughout your career, Aubrey, do you ever experienced, I should say, any kind of sexism? Someone wouldn't ride you because you were a girl?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of it. I mean, it's not something that they'll often say blatantly to you, but it has been a problem with some trainers that they won't put me on because I'm a girl. I've noticed in Louisiana, I don't have as much of a struggle with that. They're a lot more open to riding girls down here, and I think they're becoming more open to it. We definitely don't get the same opportunities as the boys do, though. That's here at the fairgrounds, for example, we have 3 girls that are riding regularly. We're not riding anywhere near as many races as the boys are.
Have you seen that get better since you started, or is it pretty much the same?
I think it's I think it's about the same. I don't know. It's tough to say. I'm hoping that the industry is coming to a point where they're recognizing the value of female riders. We're just as good as the boys, often just as strong, sometimes stronger, and we have a lot of abilities that sometimes the boys don't have. So I think that they're starting to see that we sit a lot more horses than they think we do, and that is a good thing.
Jockey Aubrey Green joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Aubrey, you were doing well at Turf Paradise. And mm-hmm. how did you do that first year with the bug?
Well, my bug ended when I was at Louisiana Downs, and I won some 80 some races. I can't say exactly for sure. I know I should know that number exactly how many I was. My greatest after my bug ended, that I kept winning races, and even up until I got injured, and even coming back from my injury, you know, I've been able to prove yet again and again that I am a good, confident, strong rider, that I make good decisions on a horse, that I relax horses well, and that I can bring them home just as strong as the boys can.
You mentioned that doing well after the bug. Sometimes a lot of jockeys can struggle with that without carrying that weight allowance, and some trainers are really high on having the weight allowance. Do you think that weight makes a difference? 5 pounds less, 7 pounds less. Do you think that really helps a horse?
I don't think that 5 pounds makes a difference. I think when you get up into the 10-pound range, you really are helping a horse out. But, I mean, 5 pounds, it seems like adding 2 pounds to us. You know, it's such a small amount that I don't really think that it's making a big difference. I did lose some barns that I was riding for once I lost my bug. And the trainer flat out told me, you're not a bug anymore, you know, so he wouldn't put me on. And that's fine. I have outrun his horses many, many times in many races, and I'll continue to do that and keep proving that I don't need 5 pounds to be one of the best.
I love it. I love it, Aubrey. You said that was at Louisiana Downs you lost your bug. And so obviously you've stayed in Louisiana, in the state of Louisiana, now riding at Fairgrounds. What do you like about that circuit?
My favorite thing about the Louisiana circuit is the people. I really, really love the people down here in Louisiana. I've told many people that ask, you know, where I'm going next or if I'll go to another state, you know, no, I'm going to stay here in the swamp because I really like it down here in the swamp.
And what's different there versus the other places you've ridden? Are the jockeys different? Obviously, here at Fairgrounds, yeah, it's a pretty tough colony. What's different about that?
It's a very tough colony. The riders here are excellent. I continue to learn from them. Not necessarily that they're, you know, directly trying to teach me, but just by the experience of riding with them, I continue to learn. And so it is a very tough colony, but it's a great colony. There's great camaraderie. We try to look out for each other the best that we can, but we're also very competitive. At Louisiana Downs especially, I just find that family camaraderie that our jockey colony has, I love it. And I don't think that you can find that in many of the racetracks.
What's the atmosphere like there in the girls' jocks room?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. The girls here, we get along. I know that there's sometimes problems in girls' jockeys' rooms just because of the competitiveness, and girls can sometimes be catty. But here, it's been very smooth going. We're professional with each other. We're friendly with each other. We spend time outside of the racetrack with each other, often working out together and things like that. And it's been a great experience, both, you know, this winter and last winter. Just been really wonderful.
I'm sure you've ridden at meets where there were no other girls and you were the only one in the girls' jocks room. Do you like having other women in the room?
You know, I'm kind of indifferent to whether there are other women in the room or not. If they're there, great. If they're not, it's fine with me too. At Louisiana Downs, most of the time during my bug year, I was the only girl in the room. I enjoyed the solitude because I was, you know, able to just focus on my races and not have to converse or, you know. it was really nice to be able to just have that solitude sometimes. But having the camaraderie that we have, too, is wonderful. And being able to talk about the races with each other, that's also nice and relieving. So
you mentioned focusing on the races. How do you prepare to ride?
I don't have a real good routine for preparing. I always show up an hour before the races just so I have time to get ready. I don't like to be rushed. But really, I just turn on some music, and it'll be any kind of music depending on my mood. Sometimes it's really pump up. Sometimes it's really relaxed. And so it's never, you know, I'm not consistent when it comes to getting ready for the races. I do pull out the form and look over it briefly. I don't like to go into too much detail when I look at a racer. I will overthink it. So I'll look very quickly who's the speed, who stops consistently, who's coming from off the pace and can really close. And I will just kind of gather, you know, that information and plan my race around that. But as you know, being a former jockey, plan A maybe 1 out of 10 times is what's going to happen.
You said it. That's exactly. Yeah, plan A, B, C, but usually it's nothing even close to that.
Yeah.
Now, Arbor, you, I guess it was last year, you prepared for a race at Keeneland in which you won. If I remember right, I think you were double-digit odds that day. That had to be pretty exciting. Keeneland, a very prestigious racetrack. What was that experience like, and what brought you to Keeneland?
So when I came back from the injury that I told you about, the injury happened in December, just before Christmas of 2017. And when I came back, I finished out the fairgrounds meet the last 3 weeks, and I, you know, put on that show like I was telling you, oh, I'm ready. Strong, I've got this. But I knew I really, really wasn't. My muscles were not back. I'd only been back on horses for a week before I started race riding again. And so I decided to go to Keeneland, and I was not planning on race riding. I went there to gallop and to get my muscles back. So I actually spent the majority of that time galloping, but I ended up picking up a mount here and there. And my last day there, I ended up picking up that horse for Jose Sanchez that I ended up winning on. He was, I think, 27-1. I was really nervous because I galloped that horse every day. That horse was strong. And so I was really nervous about it because I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll send him to the lead. That way, you know, I can keep myself out of any kind of trouble. Well, as we talked about plan A, B, C, and D, plan A didn't work. My horse stumbled out of the gate, and I was behind the field. So I thought, okay, I can do this, and I just breathe. I had to just breathe and make sure, you know, I was like, I am strong enough. I am in control of this horse. So I put him behind horses. I sat behind the two the horses that were setting the pace. One of them was James Graham, and I can't remember who the other one was. But anyway, as we came around to the quarter pole, I had more than enough horse, even though I was, you know, the longest shot on the board. I just swung her three wide to the outside and rode down the stretch, and I ended up winning the race by like a half a length, I think. Can't even remember, but it was, I was so excited to win that race, and it was so unexpected. I honestly was in shock. And when you look at the replay and the films of it, even my mom and everybody that watched it, they said you could just tell you were so excited and so in shock. I was not expecting to win that race.
Did you hear the crowd that day? Obviously, Keeneland, a very popular meet brings out a lot of people.
When I was jogging the horse back to the winner's circle, I could hear the crowd, and it was, I mean, amazing. And that was also a reminder for me. That race was a huge step for me coming back from that injury to show myself and everybody else that I could do it, you know, and that I was able to hold that horse and to relax that horse behind horses. It was like, okay, I'm good. I can do this again. You know, this injury was a minor setback, and I can come back.
You've talked about the injury several times, Aubrey. What exactly happened to you?
Well, here at the fairgrounds, I was riding a horse I had already won on once before. My instructions were to take the horse back because there was a lot of speed in the race. And unfortunately, I ended up clipping heels going into the first turn and going down. And when I went down, I was actually thrown in front of my own mount, and he ran me over. So it was pretty significant. I had 5 broken ribs with 6 total breaks. One of the ribs was broken in 2 pieces. And a lacerated liver, lacerated spleen, a collapsed lung, and an impinged shoulder. I was in the ICU for 3 days, had major surgery with plates put on. I had sutures to some shredded muscles. My liver was sutured. So it was a pretty significant injury. And, of course, at the time, I was like, oh, this is nothing. I'm going to bounce right back. And it proved to be a much more difficult process coming back than I wanted it to be and than I thought that it would be.
My gosh, you're lucky to be alive, Aubrey. That sounds like a pretty bad spill. Definitely. Did you ever have any doubts of coming back?
No. I prepared myself for an injury because I knew that if it's not if, it's when you're riding racehorses. And when I first started this, my parents and my family were not supportive. And obviously because of the risk of injury, it was a huge part of it. But as my family became more supportive and, in fact, involved and loving what I do, I reminded my mom along the way, you know, it's not if, it's when. So when it happened, she came out. She was at the hospital, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm going right back. And she said, I know. She said, you told me it's not if, it's when, and it's okay, and I know you're going to go back. I said, okay, because I knew that I was going to be riding again.
Was that tough for you to be laid up for a while, that time off?
It is the hardest thing in the world for a jockey to not be able to get on horses.
Is that...
It's a very psychologically devastating more than anything.
So you talked about the physical injuries and the psychological turmoil you go through. What's worse? Obviously, psychologically and emotionally, you also have to deal with the politics of the business and getting mounts and sometimes losing mounts. What is overall the hardest part of riding?
Definitely just keeping up your confidence because, you know, this is a game of peaks and valleys, and the valleys are much, much bigger than the peaks. And so when you're in a slump and you're riding horses that aren't running good, and, you know, of course you're not getting the better mounts because your horses aren't running good, then you start to feel like maybe you start doubting yourself. And so that's the hardest part of this game, is keeping yourself confident and knowing that, you know, the wins are going to come. They are going to come. There are, you know, you just have to remember those valleys will end and you'll get your peaks back. And the valleys are coming again. So you have to be ready for that too.
Aubrey, what goals have you set for yourself?
I'm kind of a day-to-day person, so I've never been one to set huge goals. In fact, I'm doing better now than when I started. When I started, it was just I want to ride. I didn't know where I wanted to be, which is why I've ridden all over the country in many states, many racetracks, because I didn't have real goals set into place yet. At this point, I really want to be leading rider at Louisiana Downs this summer, I'm going to try my hardest because I was second leading rider my buzz year. I ended up fourth last year, even coming off of that injury. And it was hard to get my business built back up after that injury because when you're hurt and you come back and then being a girl on top of it, you have to prove yourself again to those trainers and to those owners. And so it took me half the meet to start really building business again. But I really would like to get that leading rider title, hopefully this year. And then I want to have a successful career where I can come to the fairgrounds and I can ride and be competitive and win races. And eventually I would like to go ride in Kentucky. So that, what I would have to say, is probably the biggest goal, is to be able to get to Kentucky and ride there and to be competitive there. I don't want to just go like I did at Keeneland and pick up a couple mounts here and there. I want to be able to go and be competitive and to be one of the riders that they want to put on their horse and be on the card.
Well, we'd love to have you here, Aubrey. Be great to see your name in the program, riding regularly at Keeneland and Churchill and everywhere around Kentucky. Now, how would you describe your riding style?
It's still developing, so I can't pin it down just yet. But I really do like a speed horse. I like to be sitting 1, 2, 3, so I would probably be considered a speed rider. I've won many races coming from clear back. I'm not incapable or afraid or uncomfortable doing that. But my favorite place to be, I'd like to be in control, so I like to be running the pace as much as I possibly can. And as we talked about, you know, I get them out of the gate, and so it's really my forte is to be right up there somewhere close.
What do you feel like you would still like to get better at?
That's a good question. I mean, there's always so much room for improvement. And like I said, my style is still developing, so I'm still trying to figure out where I'm the most comfortable. I probably would like to get better at relaxing behind horses. When I'm somewhere up close, even if I'm behind two horses up front, I'm very comfortable, and my horse is always very comfortable. But when I get further back, I start second-guessing where the race is going to go sometimes. So that's probably what I would like to develop the most right now, is planning out a race from further back.
Aubrey, if you could go back in time, would you change anything about your career?
Nothing. I would not change anything.
Good answer. I like that. Now, how about if...
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When people have regrets, it's the saddest thing in the world, because every experience that we have brings us to where we are. And if I changed anything, it might change where I am. And I love where I am.
Good answer, Aubrey. Now, with that being said, if a young person came up to you today and they said, how do I become a jockey? What path would you lead them to? How would they go about doing that?
Well, they need to start galloping racehorses first. And I always, always, always suggest start slow, because when you rush into it the way that I did, sometimes it's a little bit dangerous when you rush into it, and it's also difficult for you to develop your riding skills before you make your mistakes. You know, you don't want to make too many mistakes and ruin your reputation. So start out slow, gallop, get strong, work horses in the morning, get comfortable doing that. Do a lot of the gate work, a lot of those school-in races. And, that's what I would tell them. Just take their time doing it.
Aubrey, we only have a few minutes left here on the show. Tell us, what do you do for fun?
This is it. This is what I do. I don't do a whole lot outside of the racetrack. My life mostly revolves around the racetrack, and when I have my kids, it revolves around them and the racetrack. And so, outside of that, the only thing I do is, you know, sometimes I spend time with my own thoughts, and I write poetry, and I like to be involved in music and art, artistic things like that. But in the last 2 years, I've been so busy that has slowed down a lot, something I want to start doing again. But yeah, I hate to sound like such a boring person, but I don't do anything else.
Takes up a lot of your time, so not much left.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned your parents before and how initially they were not very supportive or happy about the idea of your chosen profession, and now obviously they are much more supportive, seeing how much you love it. Do you keep in contact with them on a regular basis? Do you ever go back and visit?
I talk to my mom almost every day on the phone. I talk to my dad, you know, maybe once a week or so when he's around. He's a workaholic. That's where I got my drive. And so I don't get to talk to him as often. But I don't go home and visit very often. Like I said, I this does take up so much of my time. And I hate taking days off. I really do. So I don't do that, and I should, but I haven't been home. I can't even tell you in how long. I kind of beg my mom to come and see me.
Well, Aubrey, unfortunately, we are all out of time. I can't thank you enough. This was great spending the last hour with you, and I wish you all the best and good luck this weekend riding at Fairgrounds. Keep an eye out for Aubrey Green and the program, folks. Aubrey, thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.